Attention, please. Places for top of show. Places for top of show. Hello, and welcome to Twins Talk Theater. We are Cindy.
And Stacy.
And we're talking about theater, backstage life, and all the excitement that the audience doesn't get to see.
Enjoy the show.
Hi, today we are interviewing two people. Skylar Johnson, who's a freelance lighting designer, and Kyle Pollitt, who is, what did we decide your title was at Universal Studios?
Technical manager of entertainment production.
At Universal Studios. I have worked with both of them on and off over the last couple years. Mostly Kyle comes in to work with Skylar when we need more lighting assistance. But Skylar has done lighting design at a number of shows at the Norris, as well as freelance at a number of different areas, one of them being Six Flags Magic Mountain, which I think is cool. You both work at amusement parks. I don't know anyone who's worked in the tech side of amusement parks. So welcome to the podcast. Also, Skylar, I think, has listened to every one of our episodes as soon as they came out and was super excited.
Yeah, I think
excited.
Within 30 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And was super excited. Not only we have a podcast, but we own a corgi, which is one of the reasons she came over to do the podcast is to pet the puppy.
This is very true. I can confirm.
So welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So how did you guys get into the, I mean, you both went to school and you both have master's degrees, I think?
No. Only Kyle.
Kyle has a master's.
I have a BFA.
Nice.
Yeah.
So why did you decide to, one of the questions we've asked some people is, Cindy went to grad school and I didn't go to grad school. Do you think it was useful for you to go to the grad school? Did it help on getting jobs or learning more things? Or
it's definitely helped with. So I went to CalArts, and it's helped with the name behind it. There's a lot of the people in the industry who associate CalArts to this guy will know everything we're going to put him through. Just because of that name, because they know the program is very stringent and there's a lot of various learnings that we do there that like really prepare us for the workforce.
Nice.
But it was actually, I was going to Palomar College and I was like, maybe I'll do a 4-year. I don't know. Like, I like theater and actually I love theater and I want to stay in this world, but I wasn't really like sure what the next step was, and CalArts was the only thing I applied to, and it was just really a shot in the dark. Skylar's gonna hate it, but like I had no clue which department I was gonna be going into, and so I was very much like, oh, maybe like sound design or lighting design or film, I don't know. And then like I was reading the job description, or not the job descriptions, the class descriptions, and it was like, oh, technical director, it's like what, it's a little bit of everything, jack of all trades kind of thing. I'm like, oh, I could do that. Got in.
That's kind
it.
Of how I feel about stage management as well. Like, well, I know how to work in the costume shop and I know how to build sets and I've hung lights before, so I can read music, so I'll stage manage.
Exactly.
Yeah. I did stage manage for a really long time, and that's like primarily what I did. And then I got into an internship that was in a union house. And so everything was very much you do lighting or rigging or audio. And I found mm-hmm. that lighting was the most similar to stage management because
oh, absolutely.
You're
yeah.
kind of a liaison of the artistic department and the technical team. And so it was really interesting.
I never thought of that lighting is more like, yeah, because I guess the sound people, there's artistic stuff for sound, but it's not really relating a vision or anything. And
yeah.
costumes and props kind of go work on their own and then come back.
Yeah. I mean, I think for sound too, it's very much, there's a big divide between being a sound designer and being an audio engineer. Whereas I find mm-hmm. being a lighting designer, there's a lighting designer and a master electrician, and that's totally different, you know?
Yeah.
So,
but you guys have
yeah.
to work together. Like, you stand on stage and say, point this light here.
Oh, yeah.
And the electrician needs to know where it's plugged in and how to focus the light and all that. But then you both work on programming the board.
Yeah.
You kind of have to know the language of the board to program it or what the look is going for.
Yeah, and I mean, having a good relationship with your master electrician is really key. And is really, I mean, Danny from the Norris is terrific, and I think that's why I enjoy doing shows there so much is just because everyone on the team, I have such good relationships with them.
Danny just walks away quietly. Yeah. You don't know what he's doing, but he's come back and he's finished everything. It's like, oh, yeah. Okay, great. Good job, Danny. And he just walks away again.
He's very intuitive.
And very quiet.
Which is what I need. Yeah.
Like, oh, Danny made a joke.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's excellent. Great.
I think it's great that you were a stage manager first, though. I don't know if I've ever met any stage managers or lighting designers that transition from one to the other, but I know a lot of stage managers who have married lighting designers because they just usually work so well together.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I find that it helps me tremendously in communicating. Like, I know exactly what they need. And I feel like it also, having a background that so heavily relies upon communication really helps me talk to the other departments and know how to phrase things. Because, I mean, everyone communicates very differently.
Yes.
Carpentry, just grunting.
Yeah.
Over the side. Lots of cursing over in that area.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But that's also true that stage managers usually have to call all the lighting cues, but they don't call all sound cues, and they don't have to call costume changes usually. So lighting designers and stage managers, have to speak the same language.
Yeah. Even Jessica, who's come and assisted me on the last couple of shows I've done at the Norris, she does pretty much half and half. So I know she's been in talks to stage manage some of the upcoming shows that I'm working on, which is a funny relationship. Excellent. But I think that it's your brain kind of operates on the same wavelength, you know?
That's really cool.
That's really cool.
Cindy usually gets along with the lighting people pretty well.
Yeah, almost always. And I, even if I don't get along with them, I know how to communicate with them well, and I know how to call their shows. So
that's important.
Yeah. And that's important. Yeah, exactly. Like I have to say, last night we was our final dress of the show I'm currently working on, and I missed two cues, which I guess isn't bad because there's like 150 cues in this 90-minute opera. But at least three times over, headset, I called the cue perfectly, and the lighting designer said that was perfect timing. And so I was like, I'm gonna take that as a huge compliment because it was the first time that he said that to me, and we've already gone through the show six times. So,
so then outside of you getting out of school, Kyle, how did you get a job at an amusement park? Like in Southern California, we have a ton of amusement parks everywhere. But I do know one person. You're friends with Irma.
Yeah,
Gomez.
I know, yeah.
I just saw on Facebook when I was looking up what your title was, you're friends with Irma. I went to the University of Redlands with her.
Yeah, we worked at Universal together, and then, she came back to visit recently.
Yeah, but she'd moved out to Texas to do stuff. So, yeah, so how did you get a job at Universal and then become a TD of their entertainment department there?
So right after graduation, I moved back down to San Diego, and I was working at the Old Globe Theater.
That's a hard one to get into. They do a lot of good stuff.
It was very fun. I was working as a carpenter, but I was going towards being like their ATD. I was actually against one of the other guys that was also applying for the job. And so, the summer season ended around September. The other guy got the ATD position, and so I was like, well, I don't know if I really want to just stay here as a carpenter. Like, literally that week, I got a call from another, his name was Ben. He went to school with me at CalArts, and then we were, like, really good friends then. He was working at Universal, and was like, hey, I need an ATD for our Grinchmas event. What are you up to? I'm like, well, actually, my contract just ended at the Old Globe.
Perfect timing.
15 days later, I had an apartment up in North Hollywood. I was all settled in and like just packed up all my stuff and started and just have been there since. I've ended a contract between that and went and worked for LA Pro Point Rigging Company and then a different staging company. But it always brought me back to Universal just because, like, the family that I've developed there is really just, like, what's bonded me to that place. And it's great.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the bonding of people in theater. Like, it's a very short-term, stressful, lots of hours living together, and then it ends and everyone goes different ways. But during those tech weeks and rehearsal process and shows, it makes a lot of very strong bonds. And going back to the show Cindy's opening right now, she's doing she's a stage manager, and one of her opera singers was a guy I went to the University of Redlands with too and did a couple shows with. It's just funny how it all like came back around, and like she's
well, there's also like one of the other singers is somebody that I spent 2 summers ago or 3 summers ago was in a program that I was in, and the director is somebody that I've worked with for a few years back in California, and so there's just like all of these different connections of people all over the place.
Yeah, and then you working with Irma, who I haven't seen for years, but she graduated 1 year before me at the University of Redlands, so we did a lot of shows together, and it's a very small community, even though there's a bunch of different places around. And Cindy's from, she's in Brooklyn right now, well, she lives in Brooklyn most of the time, and they're in Boston right now doing a show, but Craig, the singer, he's been all over the world. I mean, technically he's from Claremont, but I've never seen him in that city more than a month before he's out on the road doing another opera somewhere.
Wow.
So it's definitely a small world, and the people you meet, you stay close to and you still talk to, because you never know when you're going to run into them again.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, both of us are from San Diego, and we both did a ton of freelance work down there. And so whenever we even go to parties or anything down there, you'll see people and you'll be like, oh my gosh, I was best friends with you for 2 months for the run of this.
Yeah.
And then, oh, I was best friends with you for 3 months or 2 weeks, or, you know, and it's crazy how close you get to everyone. And so when you see them, it's like reconnecting with someone who was your cousin, or, you know, and it's like, oh, but we actually only knew each other for this many months, you know, or.
With the cast for Spelling Bee, like, I think one of them knew the other one beforehand, but the rest of the cast didn't know anybody else. And they were so excited, like, they were sitting on top of each other on the couch and holding hands, and they couldn't wait to go out after shows to do parties. And then during Tech Week at one point, they're like, can you believe we've only known each other for 3 weeks? And I'm like, wait, you guys didn't all know each other beforehand? Because that's what it looks like right now, that you guys all knew each other for months and months beforehand. And it's only been a couple weeks, and they still, I mean, Facebook helps. Everybody keeps up on Facebook and go see each other's shows. And when you need a job, like, I think Kim brought you in because she knew you ahead of time.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, I know a lighting designer. And I said, great, we need a lighting designer. And then now you've done how many shows at the Norris?
I was actually thinking about it in the car ride down here. I've done every youth show for over a year now. It's like almost a year and a half, probably, realistically. And then I did Spelling Bee, was my first of the produced series.
But you also do the, besides the education shows, you do the showcases from the Conservatory Dance Group.
Which are some of my favorites.
Because we're like, here, Skylar, money, dancers, do stuff.
Well, I'm excited. I mean, I love Joel so much, who's one of the conservatory co-directors. And he sent me an email a couple months ago and was like, you'll never guess what the name of the show is. Light Up the World. And I was like, yay, we're on the same wavelength.
Lights everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a little bit of what we were talking about offline just a couple minutes ago of it's fun getting to do shows like that, because with shows like Spelling Bee or I'm trying to think of another one. Like maybe Fame too, a little bit. You want to be in this realistic world and you don't want to take away from the heart of what's happening on stage. But when you're working on a showcase or shows like Adams, or, you know, where it really is about making
stylized.
You know, and so it's always fun to get to do the most, you know.
And we don't put sets in your way or anything.
Yeah.
We just give you,
which is awesome.
Yeah. Here's some fabric. Go for it. What lights can you put on that?
Yeah.
So it's like, here's an entire set, and we're going to put this table that holds everyone for Adam's family right in the leg so that you can't get any lights to them. Oh, yeah, you need to get lights to them. Okay, we'll move the tables.
Yeah, well, and it seems like for the showcases, a lot of the scenic units end up being light involved. You know, like we built
giant
this, like,
wall.
We built like a giant light wall for the last one. It's like, okay, well.
Yeah, because Joel likes smoke and haze and lights and movement. Yeah. And I mean, he is a choreographer.
Yeah.
Have you guys used the new, well, I think it's new, I've used it on the, well, we've used it on the last two shows I've done, these LED tape lights?
Oh, yeah, I've used the tape lights.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't used them on a Norris show yet, typically, because, I mean, there isn't usually a scenic designer, or, like, Stacy is kind of the scenic designer,
yeah,
or, like,
so it's
a kind mesh of.
Push it together.
Yeah, whereas, I've used them on a couple shows. Like, I did Little Drummer Bowie, which was with the Troubadour Theater Company.
Oh, yeah. They were saying it was all the music of David Bowie.
Yeah. Yeah, they're amazing. We're actually, both of us are working on a show with them in December called How the Prince Stole Christmas, which is the music of Prince with the story of How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Excellent.
But they're
awesome. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, they just put up tickets like 2 days ago and they sold out all their shows within 90 minutes because they have such like a name in that area.
It's at the El Portal in North Hollywood and it's like a big theater. And, yeah. And we were just talking to them. They were like, we've never seen that happen.
Yeah.
That crazy. Is excellent. Well, I know the Troubadour. They're known for their mismatch and put things together in unique style. Yeah. But I think Jackie's worked there and some other people I know, and they love it. Like, the group is just great.
Oh,
and
they're amazing.
Work.
Yeah. I'm really excited to work with them again. The first time I worked with them was at the Getty Villa. We did a show there. And I know you were talking about how you have done work in a museum. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Recently?
Yep.
Yeah.
My last show in Philadelphia, we performed, it was 2 one-acts and it was inside the Philadelphia Museum of Art. So the first act took place like in an actual cloisters that was brought over from Europe.
Oh, wow.
And that one was the one that we actually used all of the LED strip lights because we couldn't, there was like no power in there. So everything had to be battery run and we had to light underneath the cloisters so the audience could sit down. So we made these like boxes that went around the outside of the cloisters with these LED tape lights inside of it to like light up the seating area.
Yeah.
When they worked.
When I first moved up here, the first show I did was in this like teeny tiny, maybe like 50 seat theater. Like it was
less than 99.
Yeah. And they just were struggling for power and the lights that they did have and the power they did have like wasn't reliable. So we used a lot of LED tape on that project as well. So it was just like a reliable, good source of light that like you could plug into a wall if you needed or, you know.
And it doesn't get hot. Nobody's going to burn themselves on
it. Yeah. It has a really interesting look too, you know. Yeah. It definitely is a choice.
I've used it at the Long Beach Playhouse. It was something Jenny Chow. Jenny Chow wasn't the whole name of it. But they built a robot. And so it was a very Sean did.
I remember you talking about this show, but I don't remember what it's called.
And they lined a number of the set pieces with the tape so that it looked like computers and gears and stuff like that, and it worked really well for that.
Speaking of the old Globe, I had worked on George Takei's show Allegiant.
We wanted to see that one.
And we built some like window scenic pieces that just had complete lined with the LED tape that ended up really looking really nice.
So how is that show? We wanted to see it, but it was closing, I think, before we made it to New York to see it.
It was very good. I can't say enough about, because it just had a great cast in it. The whole piece was very moving. It was just about Japanese internment camps. Mm-hmm. And so it was more on like the drama side of it, but they still had like their fun moments and the music was great. I very much enjoyed working on it and seeing it.
So was it at the Globe before it went out to Broadway?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Globe does a lot of premieres and
premieres
stuff.
And test runs there.
Yeah, and La Jolla Playhouse too.
Yeah.
San Diego has a couple theaters where I feel like things kind of get cultivated. Mm-hmm. Like what was it? Come From Away was one that a bunch of people we know worked on at the La Jolla Playhouse. And there was so much hype surrounding it. Everyone's like, it's going to go to Broadway. It's going to go. And it just went. And so.
Yeah.
They send so much stuff, though.
Yeah. See that one. I actually love that show. That's probably on one of my top 10 list of favorite shows.
What is it called?
Come From Away.
Come From Away.
Yeah. It's about 9/11 and how they're redirecting flights to this little island in Newfoundland. And it's all based on a true story, and it's about how all the townsfolk that take all of the passengers into their houses and feed them and house them, and
during a time when they could have been the next one to
tragedy
be crashed
and they don't know what's going on, and they have very little communication to the U.S. or wherever they're coming from, and it's fun. It's very folk music. I think it's still playing in New York, and if you have a chance, that's definitely...
Yeah, because they would definitely get a very different audience in New York. Sydney and I have been in... She lives there now, but we went to New York the first time, and the Trade Center was up, and I remember standing at the bottom and looking up. And then the second time we went, it was right after you moved out there, right? And it was after...
Yeah.
It was a couple years after it had been hit, And so you took me and Mom there when you were doing Equus, and it was still smoking hole in the ground. And then Kai and I went back a couple months ago, and the new towers in the museum were there. But listening to her husband's side of the family talk about, I mean, they were all born and raised in Brooklyn, and seeing it and being there, and it's something different that none of us experienced. Mm-hmm. We were out here. We watched it on TV, but hearing it from there. So I think it's interesting what the starting it in California and San Diego and then moving it out there. I wonder how they reacted to it out there.
From what I've heard, so far it's had really good.
Yeah, it gets great reviews, and everyone I know who's seen it has really loved it. So
it was on the Tonys this year. They did a whole scene. And then I think it's still all the original cast that was even in La Jolla all went out there as well. Wow. And I think it's primarily the same guys.
Yeah, I think they tend to do that. I know Jessica, who we talked about earlier, she was just a dresser for a couple months for Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville that was at the La Jolla Playhouse, and now that's going to Broadway. And so it's a lot of people who were in the cast were waiting to see if they got on the Broadway cast, and like a good majority of them are like, yay, we're a family. Like, we just get to all go over there now, you know?
That's good. You get to, you know what the job you have, you know people there, so you're not just wandering around the city by yourself.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
But it's cool, the sense of community, like you were saying earlier, that can be built within just a couple month period or a couple week period.
Yeah, not even months. Weeks, so it's
awesome when you get to know someone. Keep working with people you like.
That's always good. So is it the same? Because both of you work at amusement parks. Mm-hmm. Kyle, you work at Universal, and Skylar, you work at Six Flags Magic Mountain. Does it, Kyle, you said it has kind of the same community. It's a bigger park, and you guys aren't going through necessarily tech weeks in small areas. Does it still have the same kind of family and community in big amusement parks?
Yeah, well, we're very much... if I was to compare it, it would be on the theater side, but then we've got like some film coming in with us being on the just in close relation to the back lot, being in the theme park. And so it's this really good bond between the two of them. And we work in individual production teams that are assigned to various shows or events that are going on. So right now they're in build for the Grinchmas event. They're also working on Harry Potter holiday decor, which I've been walking up and down Hogsmeade, looking at all of that going up, and it's gorgeous. Like everything they're doing is amazing. They have a new show coming that's a projection mapping show on the castle.
Nice.
And so I've been working on the Jabberwockies show for Halloween Horror Nights, and that's been my project since pretty much April. We did a flight out to Vegas to do our first production meeting around then, and then they came out end of July to start teching this show. And it's very much they build these shows for our venue and our audience, and a lot of the times they take what they've come up with and take it back to Vegas with them for different new numbers that they work on. And it's very much like, in the end, we become this like tight knit group. Like, I've got a lot of the Jabberwockies phone numbers that I just like been talking to them. And like, anytime they're like, hey, come out and visit us. Like, anytime you can come get tickets to the show. I'm like, hey, thanks. I might take you out.
Yeah. Go to Vegas, get a free show. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. But for something like that, you're more of a traditional technical director. Correct, like, you just closed and had strike last night.
I've been working two new overnights in a row, trying to get the whole set out of there.
Yeah, but that's more of a thing where you have your stage management team and you have your production managers, whereas some of the other things you work on are like bigger scale projects where you don't have a set, like traditional stage manager.
Correct. Yeah, it's a lot of time. Like, we do a lot of photo ops, which don't technically need that. And then we have a lot of... instead of like a tech crew, we have our like PAs that usually work with the costume characters and all those various performers. I'm also in charge of like the Waterworld show, which is a whole nother beast, which has all of our stunt performers in it.
And that show's been going for
23 years. Do you by any chance know Dan Weingarten?
I don't think he's done much work recently, but I've met him, I don't know, probably in the past 4 years.
Yeah, no, he used to be that. He is a lighting designer I worked with a lot when I was at Long Beach Opera because he's a favorite of some of theirs. I knew he worked at some park, but I couldn't remember. But now that you say Waterworld, yeah. I think he was there for a number of years. But...
I know. We actually we just changed around a lot of the lighting to switch it to LED, and we're still very much based on his original plot.
Nice. How awesome. Intention.
So you do like the big stage shows, and then other like walking around the parks. You said like the character
people? Yeah. So I'm on a team that we call EVAC, which is the Entertainment Venues and Atmosphere Crew. Which
that
is
basically is everything at amusement park.
Yeah, pretty much.
Not entertainment or atmosphere.
Yeah.
Food. You don't do
we,
food.
Yeah, we do all of the venue support through the park. So we make sure and maintain all of the special effects show and animal actors show, and Walking Dead is one of our newest things that are now on our plate. We're doing a rehab coming up soon where now that it's over a year old and people have gone through it multiple times a day, like we're pushing thousands of people through this venue, and it needs to be fixed. And so it's been on my team to start thinking about that whole process. And so we're the part of entertainment that just maintains all of our existing venues. And it's been great. It's been a great process.
Yeah. But on the team too, it's like you have one art director and one production manager and one coordinator. So you're like the technical director for all of that stuff.
Yep.
And sometimes they'll bring in like an ATD, but it's interesting how everything's divided up differently from Six Flags and
theater. So then how does Six Flags do it? Because you do a bunch of the atmospheric lighting at Six Flags, right?
Yeah. So over the last year or so, I've been brought on for all of their big events, like Holiday in the Park and Fright Fest. And it's interesting because at Universal, there's this big lighting call them a corporation
company
called Radiance Lighting, and they have like 50 designers, and they do everything. And at Six Flags, it's pretty much one guy named Zach Moore who's like the mastermind behind everything, and then he'll bring on like two associates or three associates. So I've been doing a lot of associate work for him, and so it's like us all tackling it, so it's more inclusive, or it's more, I don't know, hands-on. And then
there's no company, you kind of have more hands-on experience.
Yeah,
singularity
and then,
design, so you can see like the whole concept goes throughout the park. I went to go see their Halloween event, Fright Fest recently. I went and visited when they were doing Holiday in a Park, and you can definitely tell that like Zach has this. Like he can comprehend this whole big picture, and then is very good at assigning all of the different zones.
Yeah, it's nice because everything it's cohesive, but there's also when you're looking at it and you're not just looking at it as how can I make this one area look the best that it can be? Because I feel like when you have one person on each area, it's like, oh, well, the best for Halloween is always going to be like blues and purples and like deep ambers. But when you're able to take a step back and be like, oh, but this is like a war zone, like let's throw in some like military greens, and you know, decisions that you wouldn't normally take if that was the only thing you were getting to do.
Yeah, it'd be like designing a scene in a show as opposed to designing the whole show.
Exactly. And so this week actually I'm designing their circus show Quirkmas, which will be really fun. And it's just been Zach designing everything in the park for the last, I think, 5 years. So this is the first time that anyone else has designed anything. So it's kind of big shoes to fill. But
you've worked with him for the last year, so you kind of know his...
Yeah, yeah.
The way he goes in the plot, so you're not going to go completely opposite of what he does.
And we're good friends, and we work on lots of other shows together. Like, we've done stuff at Theatricum Botanicum and College of the Canyons and other random places. So, I think we have a good similar.
for people, because I think you're the first lighting designer that we've actually interviewed, for people who don't know what a lighting designer does, can you take us through kind of your process since you're going to start teching or lighting this show in the next couple days? What was your process for that? Like, how do you come up with a lighting design for a show? And then how do you go through the process to implement it to get it to opening night?
Yeah, I mean, it really is different venue to venue. It tends to start off with like the phone call offering you the position. And then you read the script and you get a sense for it. I typically make lots of like inspiration boards, which I'll send off, and lots of different types of, I mean, they're all kind of inspiration boards in a way, but I'll send them off to different creative team members to make sure that we're all cohesive and we're all coming at it from the same direction. And then I'll start drafting my plot, and I'll go to the designer run, maybe a couple other rehearsals. I'll be in all the production meetings, and then we come in and do focus, and we're there for tech week. And it's interesting because I feel like with a lot of the other design elements, like sound design or scenic design, you come in and you're prepped for a lot of it. You do all your work in the weeks before.
By the time we get to tech, set design is done.
Yeah.
Like, they had better be done because we have
they had better be done. Yeah.
To go.
Yeah.
But Lighting, we're like, hey, yeah, so you came in yesterday. Can we cue?
Yeah.
Are you good?
Yeah, it's interesting because you're building your work in front of everyone. And there's a certain amount that can be pre-programmed, and you can have all of your cheat sheets and all of your everything laid out. But you really are just like designing in front of everyone. And so it's interesting. There are definitely directors who are more patient and just kind of understand that process. And so that's why I feel like as any type of freelance artist, you tend to work with the same couple people, and the same couple people who have the same style as you tend to call you back and like working with you. Like, I'm a very heavy cueer. Like, I think in Fame there were probably 400 and something cues.
Yeah.
And so
it's a dance musical, which usually does more than Spelling Bee, which there's music, but there's not a ton of dancing.
Yes.
Realistic. It's more realistic, down to earth.
Yeah, Spelling Bee probably had like 200 cues, which still is a lot for Spelling Bee. I feel like a lot of people probably do Spelling Bee with like 60, 50. You know?
Yeah.
It's like and so it definitely, it's very interesting, and it's really cool to find different assistants and different people who you assist to kind of work on the same wavelength. But yeah, that's pretty much what I do. It's an interesting blend of working with the technical team and working with the artistic team. And so it's a lot of coordinating with the directors and communicating with them while also relaying information to the technical director and the stage manager and kind of being the liaison.
I've worked with a number of lighting designers, which kind of what you mentioned about working with technical people versus artistic people is a show that I've done where lighting designers is like, well, this light feels, or this moment feels like it should be blue. And everybody was like, no, blue is a color. There is no feeling in that. And so, you know, communicating what physically needs to happen and like what those colors are or what the intensity of the light is in order to make it happen. But it's always a joke between, you know, like especially run crew and stuff, you know, they're just like, there is no creative lighting color feelings that go into any of this. But for lighting designers, feelings are like such a huge thing usually, because lights evoke emotions in people, and crew members, I guess, they don't feel that way. But
you know, crew members are like, so you want a blue gel. What color?
Yeah, right.
I don't care how you feel. Just what gel and what light am I putting it in, and how am I focusing it?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. It's definitely interesting. I think it works out really well for me personally, because I've always kind of had a very strong artistic side to me, and I love like going to museums and like doing all of the, I don't know, I'm like very crafty. But I also, like, I skipped multiple grades in school, and I've always been super drawn to anything scientific and mathematical. And so it's really a cool way to mesh those two things. And I find that my language yeah. changes a lot when I'm talking to a director versus talking to, like, Stacey or Danny. I mean...
Yeah, because then you have to still know what circuits you're using and how you're patching those, and all of the lights have different colors, so you need to know what the color looks like, but you also need to be like, okay, Roscoe 80 is a deep blue. I'm going to use that color as opposed to Roscoe 70, which is a different color. And yeah, and then cues are all done by numbers and what intensity is everything, and it's very number-oriented.
Yeah, and even just the board itself and programming it and all of the intricacies and... how you record everything, you know?
So that's a really good question. I've been actually one that I've been thinking about the last couple of days as we programmed this show is when I was in school and I was doing some lighting, you know, it was like very basic board. I think it was the expression, the ETC expression mm-hmm. or something like that, you know, which is very basic. When I was learning lights, there was like moving lights was still brand new. Nobody can afford them, all this stuff. And so it was so much simpler kind of to cue because everything was already set. You didn't have to pan, tilt, group, all of that yeah. stuff. So how much, because now I feel like lighting is changing and sound is changing exponentially. How do you guys keep up with that? I mean, it's not like you can attend classes every year to figure out what new lightboard ETCs coming out with. So how do you continue to learn and know how to cue off of new boards or new moving lights and new programs while still trying to work full time?
Honestly, that's one of my biggest struggles, I feel. I mean, it's interesting too, because for so long, I was very into conventional lighting, and I didn't, especially.
But because now you're like, ooh, I got this new moving light. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, great. Yeah. It's going to break.
Exactly. I was very not against moving lights, but I still feel like there are some colors and some warmth that you just can't obtain with a moving light. Like some things are just better incandescent, and that's just going to be the way it is. But now.
LEDs too, they just don't have some of the right colors.
Yeah. LED. Especially for like dance stuff and stuff where you're really focusing on like revelation of form and I mean just color theory. But I find that like even a good example is Putnam was the first show I've done without moving lights in maybe 2 years, at least a year and a half. And so it was interesting even drafting my plot and being like, oh man, if I need specials, I'm going to have to put a special in every position in both warm yeah. and cool and purple or blue.
Yeah.
And I'm going to need one with texture and I'm going to whatever. And so I think that I almost over-prepared because it was like the anxiety of like, I've had this tool that I can just point wherever I need and like change all of these
yeah,
things
the
about. Yeah.
And the color and where it's pointed at.
Yeah. So it's always interesting going back and being like, oh, I can still do this. And it does still look good. And I don't need this security blanket.
Well, do you find one easier or harder than the other? Because is it, I don't know if easier or harder is the right word, but is it like simpler, for lack of better words, to cue when you have a set plot? Because you don't have to spend 20 minutes like panning, tilting, focusing a light because you just know that light is always going to hit that exact same location. Or do you find it easier the other way with all the moving lights?
I think my answer now is probably different from what it would be 2 years ago, and it's different
because now
from
you're
what
used
it'll
to it.
Be in 2 years. I think that I right. kind of go in waves with it. Like right now, I would love to have as many moving lights as I can just on my plot so that I have all the options. Like I like knowing that if an actor is going to stand in a different place, that I can just say, okay, great, let's spike it, and I will put a light on them, and I can have it on them from 10 different directions in the next 30 seconds, you know?
True, yeah.
But it also, with that comes endless possibilities of all the different things you could do, and so I think that when you're working with a plot that has more options, you tend to go into the shows feeling like you could have done more, you know? It's like, if you're working with 300 lights, you did what you could with the tools that you were given. But if you're given these tools that can kind of do anything, it's like the possibilities are endless. And you could have done X, Y, and Z also.
Yeah.
You know?
And then there's the other side where Cindy and I look sometimes, which is the budget. And it's like, you didn't have moving lights for Spelling Bee because we didn't have the budget for moving lights for Spelling Bee.
Yeah.
And so that also changes things. And sometimes I know you've come and been like, hey, I want these lights. We're like, well, we can afford two of them, but not six of them. So what can you do with some of the lights and not all the lights? Because moving lights are way more expensive. And most people don't keep them in house because when they break, they're not as easy to fix. And you just rent them in so you have a limited time with them. And the budget always comes into play.
Yeah, I know that we've also been talking about the potential of, like, buying moving lights, and with that comes all sorts of other things, and it's just, you can't really win. It's like you just, but I definitely have found certain ones that are, like, Chinese knockoffs that have been super reliable for, like, the last 20 shows, and, you know, you do find, like, the diamonds in the rough, and you do learn, like, in what position they're going to be the most helpful. Because there are some moments where, like, for Castle, the dance show that we did, like, it was really awesome to have two on the ground in the back. Like, that just looked awesome.
Yeah, and blind the audience. They didn't really like people, but they did more of the atmospheric set look as opposed to, I can see this person's face because of this light.
But if I knew that I only had those two lights, there's a 0% chance they would have been in that position because they would have needed to be, like, on the second electric where they're the most useful and you can use them for front light and back light and side light. And, you know, so it's kind of prioritizing and realizing what you can do with your budget and all of that.
So then how does budget work at Universal? You guys given a budget? I mean, obviously your scale is probably much bigger than a three-week run of a Putnam County Spelling Bee at a local place.
We often describe ourselves as the oversized regional theater.
not Disneyland.
Yeah, we do have a bigger budget, but, like, it sometimes doesn't help in our favor because with Universal's name, a lot of times something that would cost $100 if you're to do it in theater will cost a couple $1,000s to do at Universal, and we're very much working with the vendors that we've got and our on staff tech service and their capabilities of what they're able to build on site versus what we have to vend out. We're constrained due to throughput a lot of the times. So if we're not getting as many guests, we're not going to get as much budget on a project. So you see things like Halloween Horror Nights who sell out 90% of the run at least. So they get the largest bucket of money because they know that that's what's bringing guests to our property. Mm-hmm. Where if I was to be putting up a little photo op in the middle of the park, they'd be like, oh, great. Like, no one's
here's
coming
20
for
bucks.
That specifically. Like, what can you do for cheap? So it really depends on what the project is. And I know they've been getting really good at what you put into it is what you get out of it, which has been a big change when Comcast took over. If you see, like, our Harry Potter land, like, that Wizard World of Harry Potter.
News, when we knew it was coming to California because it got some big review in Florida, like, it was all over the internet. Like, that's anyone ever talked about. Kai's sister and family bought season tickets. We've been wanting to go, and we just haven't. Like, Harry Potter land, and everything I've heard is that it's amazing, just the details on everything and the way it was built and the way it's run and the ride and everything about Harry Potter Land is amazing.
And it's all because of the partnership with Warner Brothers. They have very strict contracts. They make sure that every little detail is true to the story, true to the world, even to a point where the story that I like to tell is we adjusted our grout thickness on the cobblestones of the park in our Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and we had to go all the way to J.K. Rowling for approval on this thickness of our grout. And it's like,
did she even pay attention to that when she was writing?
It's one of those, like, there's a whole approval of like, this person signs off and this person signs off. And if I have to put a single light outside the land that might shine into the land, I have to go through all these approvals just because they are so invested in it, which is perfect because, like, it really enhances the guest experience. Mm-hmm.
I've never heard anybody come away who didn't say it was like the most amazing thing ever.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt and I went to the one in Florida a few months ago, and yeah, it was just stunning. It was so amazing. It was such an awesome experience just to walk through everything. And I think we went on like 3 rides total, but we just kept walking through the park and we really only went for Harry Potter. So it was so amazing.
So that's one of those things where they'll dump millions of dollars into it because they know that's what is going to bring the guests, which is slightly different than what you would come with a theater show. Cause like you'll sell out your house, but you're doing this for the art of it, to actually like be able to tell these stories in theater, and you're, if it's a 99 seat or if it's 300 seat, like it really matters more to the show versus what the push throughput of the audience. So that's really the difference.
Yeah, because you guys have months or years for people to come through, where most shows run a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. You can't, plus we don't do nationwide marketing campaigns to get people to see a small show. So then how does it work with, in theater, we get, almost everything starts with a script or music or something. And so we build off of that. In Harry Potter Land, there's movies in a world, or any show you do at Universal or Six Flags or the Atmospheric Light. How do you come up with a design when you don't have a script, you don't have characters, you don't have things like that? Like, what are you focusing on? What are you building?
There's a lot of different avenues for this. We work really closely with Universal Creative, who usually comes up with a lot of our quote-unquote scripts, who they'll be like, we're doing this in the park. Everybody get ready, because, like, this is coming. And so, for example, we're doing a DreamWorks Theater, which is taking place in our Shrek venue. It's going to be a big changeover that we're bringing in Kung Fu Panda. And so we've now partnered with DreamWorks. So because of this eventual, like, getting this new attraction, we now were able this past summer to bring our DreamWorks characters to our Universal Plaza, which is in the center of the park, and do multiple photo ops with them. And that was like a big, everybody was coming to see this because it was the first time Universal's had like a large series of various DreamWorks show movie characters.
Nice. So you guys, your planning is more spread out and throughout like a year or 2 years, exactly, as opposed to a couple weekends.
So we know what's coming in the future, and it actually helps with us being a movie lot. So we knew that Jurassic World was coming out, so we were preparing for our raptor photo op, which we have large costume character raptors that I built the scenic for. So they walk from our staging area, and then they go and perform with a very Chris Pratt-esque performer that is training them. And it's just been a huge success, and working with Transformers, and we have our Transformer costumes in the park down the lower lot. And we know when like a new movie's coming out, in advance, we're striving forward to that to see if
you got
to
design and build and figure out all the tech stuff for that particular show in the park.
Exactly.
So then also you work on a lot that has movies. Most of the stuff we do is come and gone and nobody knows what it is, but you're working on stuff that thousands of people come see and take pictures of, and it's related to the movie. And
exactly. And so it really bonds the guest, because they've hopefully gone and seen the movie, now they can like experience what they've just watched. That shows a lot in our Halloween Horror Nights events, where we're very screen accurate, where we go, like this year we had The Shining, and we got everything down to like the wallpaper and the carpets that were exact to the movie, so that when somebody is walking through it, and I don't know, most people probably don't appreciate it and they're just there to get scared. But there's like a lot of the fans that walk through it and go, oh, I know exactly this room from this scene. And it looks like I am now standing in this movie. And so that's what we really strive to get the guest experience through.
Yeah, that's really cool, because we don't allow patrons on stage.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things like, oh, it's fine, the patrons are 20, 30 feet away, nobody's going to see that, it's close enough.
Right.
Whereas you have to make it like touchable and walkable.
Exactly, no sharp edges. We have to make sure that like everything is padded if it needs to be. We have to make sure that everything's very durable, because you know how like we call it universal permanent, where we don't know if it's going to be like a temporary thing or if it's going to go for years. And then we just have to continue the upkeep on something that we had built for a few months.
Uh-huh. Very so, different building.
Yeah, exactly. And we also have a very strict, LA County fire and building and safety. And we're all completely, half of my job at least is dealing with the government authorities that are making sure that the guests are safe and that everybody, like, even if we put up a stick of truss, it's not gonna come down in a 120 mile an hour windstorm.
It's really, it's funny, especially because Jessica, who I've mentioned a couple times now, she
we are so good at tag her on.
I know, she's the greatest. She actually yesterday, I think, officially was initiated into Local 122. So she's been doing a lot of like work with them throughout the years. And between her and Kyle, like always being on my side, they'll come to things and be like, how is this happening on stage? Like, this is so unsafe for 50 reasons. And I'm like,
because there's only five people walking on it.
Oh, that platform's flexing. Yeah. Okay.
It's fine.
It's coming down in 2 weeks. There's only 6 more performances. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a lot of that. Like, if actors had to, or if audience members had to walk or be on where actors are, then that would be very bad. But oftentimes I'm like, that's good enough.
Yeah.
It's coming down in 3 weeks. It'll hold.
Yeah.
And just the on-site engineering learnings that I've done, where it's because we have to factor in ADA guests and all of that, where we have to do a ramp that's every 1 inch, we have to do 1 foot of ramp, and we have to make sure that hallways, if we're doing our mazes, are over 4 feet, and I think we go 5'2". And it's just one of those, you don't think about that a lot in theater. It's very much like, oh, I TD tested it, I jumped on it, it's fine.
Exactly, yeah. I walked up those steps, I didn't fall, you're fine. Yeah, tell you're the good. Actors you're good. Yeah, and just cables, like we run cables all over the place and just put a couple pieces of tape on them and tell the actors not to trip. You have to have ramps over all of your things, which are ADA, and blinding audience members is fine when they're on stage or whatever, but probably not good when they're walking around trying to get through a maze.
Yeah, it was funny. We went to the CalArts portfolio review. Maybe it was this last year. Maybe it was a couple of years ago. And this guy built this amazing thing. And Kyle was like, oh, well, what if someone stands on it? And the guy was like, oh, I jumped on it a couple times. It's fine. And Kyle was like, I could never. Like, that's so awesome. Like, I wish I could just say, oh, I jumped on it a couple times.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's very much.
You're not the heaviest crew member we had to walk on. He didn't fall. You're good.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do you maintain a theme park? Like Stacey was saying, you know, in theater, we put up a set and then it comes down in a few weeks. But you guys now are building, or you build sets, you build Hogwarts that is presumably going to be up for 10, 20 years. Like, how often do you literally go through every single foot of that space to check it, to make sure that it's still safe, that screws aren't coming out, that things aren't breaking? How often do you have to repaint something? You know, how much do you have a whole team that just like upkeeps every section of the park, or how do you do something like that?
So we really rely on our tech service partners, who are our on property union. They're the facilities and painters and electricians and sound video and figure finishers, who are in charge of, like, if the one of the dinosaurs in on the Jurassic Park ride like splits a seam, and like they're the ones that are like the specialty artisans, and our we have a whole Harry Potter team of tech service members who are on a monthly, quarterly rotation where like every, or I guess it's a weekly quarter, where every week they're in a different area of Potter, making sure that like that is upkeep. They have like
still 100%.
Everything is 100%. There's no paint chips coming off. And that it's one of those like, if they get a note that somewhere where they're not currently working needs attention, they're obviously going to go over there. But like they're everything down to this moss that they apply, I'm always impressed with that. But I don't know why, it's such a fine detail that most people really wouldn't notice that there's moss growing up the side of a brick wall that's all scenic painted. But like they have to redo it probably every day. Because like people just pick at it, and it's one of those we have to go with thousands and thousands and thousands of guests walking through our park.
Touching everything. Yeah, I like to touch things.
Well, but that's what I thought was so amazing when I was at the park in Florida, you know, because I do look at that stuff. Like I get up close and personal, and I was like, how did they do the stone in the middle of the Grimwalds, you know? Right. But you're like, there are no chip, there is no chip paint, there is no fingerprints, there is, you know, and you know everyone's touching it because everyone loves Harry Potter, so
yeah,
so it's like a weekly thing.
We have park services who goes through, who are like janitors, who hose down the park every night and in the morning to make sure that everything is clean and restored back to it, and they're the ones that actually identify a lot of the maintenance, so that when the 5 a.m. tech service crew gets in and they can jump on if somebody dinged a handrail with a forklift the night before, that they can go and repaint it or fix whatever the screw that's popping out of a scenic piece that we've put up, or if some audience has kicked a foam sculpture, we can get in and re-plaster
that.
It's such
a thankless job though, because
completely.
Your job is to make it look like you didn't do anything.
It's a very good example.
I feel that way at work all the time when I'm like, I just cleaned these windows. Yeah. Why did you touch the windows? And people are always touching things. And I don't touch things like the windows because I know they have to be cleaned, but fabric or the brick wall or something. I'd hate museums that have the little guardrails. They're like, you can't get closer. I was like, but I really want to see the paint marks on the canvas.
I want to see the brush strokes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, you're constantly just making it look like nobody's been there.
Right.
But it's a thankless job, but they do a really good job at it.
And it's definitely, it's improved. Like, I started in 2012. I was 22 years old when I got brought into there. And so it was one of those, I was right out of college. I was not really thinking about those things. Where, like, the stanchions all have to have, like, the rubber feet at the bottom because of rust mitigation. Because you don't know how long those have been left out. And then, like, then they're hosing down the park. And then we are always improving on buying a better technology or buying better protection of whatever our scenic units are, and making sure that they're built stronger every year. And it's very much something that I've witnessed improve in just the 5 years that I've been working there, and it's been very impressive.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You guys have to worry about weather.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of us, they had very much outdoor.
Sun comes up and down, and it doesn't always rain in California, but it's possible to rain, and the sun's out there, and the wind's blowing, and yeah, that's stuff that Twin does some, and I've done some stuff out in parks or found spaces, but again, it's 2 or 3 weeks, not what is this going to do when it starts raining, or what's this going to do when the wind starts blowing, or what's this going to do when it's really cold outside.
You know, like we have our Grinchmas tree that's just covered in flock, and like sometimes it starts raining and we have to like bring the company back out to reflock it just because it's now all washed off and in the middle of our plaza. we have a lot of options for rain shows where we'll move our meet and greets and various things indoors, but a lot of our scenic has to be completely weatherproof. So it's always a challenge.
So how does that work with lights? Do you guys have special lights? Do you build cases around them? Or
A mixture of both. At Six Flags, it's mainly just the lights that can stand the test of time.
or the old ones that don't care about anymore.
Yeah. But I think at Disney and places like that, they tend to have, like, especially if you're doing outdoor, like, light shows where you have lots of moving lights and things that are more expensive than, like, a Source 4, you tend to build specialty cases for them, and that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, I remember when Disney was putting in the World of Color show, and we were watching it being put in and built and stuff over the, like, 18 months or whatever, all of their moving lights have these clear domes built over them, so that, because you obviously can't dunk the moving light into the water every couple of hours, so they all had special cases built.
Yeah, those are called Tempest housings.
Tempest housings.
Yeah, those are those clear domes. We were looking at doing a bunch of them for our Grinchmas event and trying to make them look like ornaments so that we could, like, keep all this,
cool.
the moving lights inside of them. They're very expensive. I would not suggest buying one for a small thing.
Yeah, well, Disney's a whole another level of money.
Yeah.
They definitely go much higher than most of us go.
So how about as far as, like, maintaining lights? We kind of mentioned this earlier with Waterworld that you guys went through recently and you're trying to update the lights. So how often do you have someone who's specialized that goes and watches your performances to make sure that the lights that the lights are still working for you? I mean, obviously, like, if a light goes out, you probably have a technician that's on call that goes and fixes it. But how often do you have, like, designers come back, or how often do you have to update things?
We have a show quality division who have actually just started probably the past 2 years being active members around the park that go and they'll watch one of our shows and make sure that all the lights are working, and if there is something if, like, the performers are still hitting their blocking, and because they're doing their shows every single day, and like, you know, some days they have off days and they start to slip, and this is the team that goes back and be like, okay, well, let's make sure that, like, everything is the same as what we put it up 2 years ago or whatever, how many years
ago.
We have our tech service sound video department who goes through and actually does the maintenance of a lot of our fixtures. The Waterworld ones, the big change was because the Edison company were trying to save power in California, so they have a big kickback of if you swap incandescent for LED, they have a big price cut on some stuff.
Yeah, we even did that at the Norris. We changed a lot of our lights to LED or incandescent, not on stage. We got some new stage lights, but just lights in the office. Because there's so many just lights in a building that just suck so much power.
Yeah,
we're
so
switching those out slowly.
All about going green.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it really helps with all of our crews that are working each show, each venue. They all send out show reports, and that's when my team and other teams know that we need to, like, step in and fix something.
So you get, like, tons of rehearsal reports every day.
My phone is constantly blowing up. Yeah.
Yeah. He has his work phone, and I feel like every time I look over, there's, like, a million emails. Like, it's just, like,
all rehearsal reports.
And be like, oh my god, I got 20 emails. Like, everyone is having so many questions for me. And he's like, I got 512. Like,
come back from vacation, I'm like, there's no way I can get through this.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've said the same thing 3 times because I obviously didn't fix it while on vacation.
Yep.
So I'm just going to skip that one.
Yeah. Or a lot of, like, this question is for Kyle. Like, defer to Kyle. Like, a lot of people just, like, forwarding emails to.
You're like, yeah, I got it.
I got it. Yeah. There's a curtain that needs to be, that's ripped. I get it.
I'll work
pin
on
it for a second. Let me jump to it when I get back.
And you guys?
You got any other questions, Twin? Besides our normal ending question, unless you guys have anything you want to say or add or talk about?
I don't know. I find it really interesting that both of you guys started in high school. Is that correct?
Yeah.
In theater?
Well, we did most things together forever. We still do a lot of things together.
I was like, we still do things together, hence this podcast.
Yeah, in high school, a friend was going to try out for a show and got cast in a show, and I think it was our freshman year. Anything
yep.
close? And she's like, do props. That'll be fun and easy. And then we can hang out after school. And we'd seen like maybe two shows before in our life. We had no idea what background stuff was or theater was. And
that's so awesome. Did you guys have a conversation where you guys were like, okay, we both like this. We're going to do it forever. Or was it like one person convinced the other? Or?
I think it just happened. I don't think we ever talked about it.
Yeah, because when we went to two different colleges and our parents wouldn't let us do theater in college. You know, they're like, yeah, you could. You can't major in theater. Like, you did it on the side. That's nice. But no one ever makes a living doing theater. We don't want you to be a starving artist. You know, so we both went to college for two different things. And we just kind of found our way back individually. I don't think there ever was an actual discussion that we had that was like, hey, dude, I'm going to do theater, so you need to do theater. You know, we both just kind of like found our way to the theater department. We both got jobs in the theater, both at different times in different departments in the theater. You know, and it just kind of happened. And I think that's how so many people fall into theater, is that it's not really something. I mean, there are, I know plenty of performers who like know when they're young that this is what they're going to do. But I feel there's so many people that they don't think they're going to do theater for the rest of their life, but it's just what comes naturally to them. And it's just what you like, and it's what you keep getting drawn to, and you end up just doing it. So,
yeah, definitely. Like, I never, it was just the easy class in college. Like, I didn't have to work on it like I did economics or accounting or read 500 books. I was like, yeah, go design a set. Great. Got that done. Moving on. And then I'd have to work on the other one. So it was just easy to do theater. Yeah.
I feel like you and Kyle are very similar in that regard.
I just used theater as the way to get out of the other classes. Because, like, it was the four of us that had the keys to, like, the entire school. And we were just like, okay, well, we got a show. See ya. And I'll do my homework eventually.
Yeah. And I never thought of being a TD. My TD in college said, hey, you should be a TD and stand here and tell people what to do. And I was like, but I could just do it faster. And it was like 2 or 3 years of him training. And even after that, until finally I'm like, got it. I don't need to do everything. I can tell people what to do and they can go do it. Then I can go deal with other issues.
Yeah.
But it definitely wasn't, I never thought I'm going to be a TD until he's like, you're a TD. You're going to be TD for the next three shows. And I was like, can I just build a set? Like, that's so much easier.
And then you just stuck with it and found a passion for it. And
yeah, started doing it after school. And then I went and got a normal, well, I guess it's not normal, S Factor.
No, I don't think it was a very normal job.
that I was a personal and executive assistant to. And then, that's but amazing. I was like, I can't sit at a desk for 10 hours a day and deal with somebody else's bullshit.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to go back to theater.
That's so awesome. See, I have an opposite experience where I started when I was like 5, and I've probably taken like 1 2-week break since then, like in my entire life.
But you
and
didn't
so,
always do lighting design. So then no. What did you start in? Acting?
Well, so I skipped a grade when I was young, and I was always super shy. Like, I wouldn't talk to anyone ever. And so my mom put me in singing lessons in hopes of helping me project and learn to communicate. And so that led to me acting in shows. And that was kind of a good way for me to meet people and communicate and express myself. And so I continued that into middle school. And then I found out that I liked being a follow spot operator, and then a light board operator, and then a soundboard operator. And then in like late middle school, early high school, I started really loving assistant stage management. And I would like take public transportation and lie about my age and take jobs and do them all around town. And then I got really into stage management. And then that, like I said earlier, kind of transitioned into lighting design and lighting. But I've definitely, it's always been such an integral part of my life. And so it's always fascinating to me when I talk to people who started later in life and like found a passion for it. So I feel like I know every play and every musical, and like I've probably done it 10 times, you know?
Yeah, which is funny because I don't. Like, people are like, oh, you must go see theater all the time. I'm like, no, half the time by the time I get home, I just sit on the couch.
Yeah.
Play with the dog. Whatever Kai's watching on TV. Like, we go see shows. I've seen quite a few shows, but not, like, I've seen quite a few shows for non-theater people.
Yeah.
As far as a theater person goes, we don't go to the theater all that often. And there's shows I forget I've done. Like, Cindy, what was the show you just did? No, you watched.
Where?
The opera that you thought was boring.
That's a lot of them.
No, the one you saw.
Oh,
the painting and the dead people that kill people at the end.
That sounds very interesting.
Again, that's all of them, dude. Yeah, Tosca.
Tosca, yeah. I did that show. Can't remember it.
That's amazing.
Because I did. No. I was the TD and production part of it. I know what the set looks like. I know how it fit in the space. I know what crew was on it. I know all of that. But I don't
actually,
what
she
the
didn't.
Plot was.
I went and saw the show, and I told her, you know, that I saw the show, and she was like, I don't know. You know, I was like, I think you've done it. Like, I don't know. And so she didn't realize what the show was until I literally started describing the set and the props.
And then I was like,
and then she was like, oh, yeah, I have done that show. But she, like, knew nothing about the show until I, like, told her what the set looked like. Yeah. I was like, well, there's this, the whole first act takes place, and there's this huge painting, and there's this whole song about a painting. And she was like, oh, yeah, I have done that one.
I remember painting and having to find paintbrushes and what colors were on the paint palette and what style the paint palette was, but I don't remember the show.
Yeah. Yeah. See, for me, I feel like we probably go see a couple shows a month.
I've definitely, I've seen a lot more theater now that we've been dating than what I had used to go and see other than the stuff that I just worked on.
Yeah. I see this stuff. And I don't even see all the shows I work on because I do a lot of one night things. And they're like, oh, did you watch that? And I was like, well, I was backstage cleaning up hospitality. Like, I didn't sit out and watch it. And I don't get out to see all the Cindy shows. And I used to build stuff at the Long Beach Playhouse all the time. I didn't go see all those shows. Like, eh.
Yeah. No, I think it helps me coming from an artistic perspective, too. Because I think that if I only see my designs, then, like, I get stuck in exactly how I like to do things. And so
that's very true. Yeah.
Sometimes it's nice to go and see other people's lighting design, even if I don't agree with all of their choices. It's nice to be like, oh, wow, I really like this one particular thing that they did. And maybe I'll try and incorporate that in the next couple shows that I do. Or, you know, maybe I'll try out using like only cools and warms if like a show calls for it. And it's nice to see those things and get inspired.
Yeah, so I think it's well, what I think is tech. Like, Kyle, do you when you go see shows, what are you watching? The plot or
the special effects that are like going on? Like, if there's a trapdoor that popped up, and I was like, I called it. Yeah. I knew that was going to be a trapdoor. Or like, I'll see like a little like flutter of glitter fall down from the ceiling and be like,
coming.
I know it. I know that there's going to be some sort of drop that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then she'll be like squeezing my hand, be like, do you see that lighting? I'm like,
no.
Nah. Not really, but like it looks good.
Yeah.
But see, I'm also super emotional, so I do pay attention to like the plot and all of the lyrics and everything. So it's kind of a fun, it's fun to always talk about the shows afterwards and see what we got from it. Because if the set sucks, like he's going to think the show sucks. Like that's just, whereas I can be persuaded by like some good plot or by some good lighting, or, you know, it can be lacking in a couple.
Like
departments,
but platform will roll across, be like, that has nice brakes on it.
Yeah,
like, I think I might look
at
those
on
up.
That, and it didn't bounce all over
good.
The place.
Yeah, it's so awesome. Stacey might feel the same thing, but you know, Kai and my husband are not theater people, and so I don't know if they enjoy going to shows with us or if it drives them crazy. Because my husband has to have like bruises on his hands and arms when we go see shows sometimes, because I'm constantly like squeezing his hand or jumping or like. If a singer gets really close to an edge, I start getting really nervous. And so then we'll talk about the shows afterwards. And he was like, I don't catch half of this stuff. Like, I think it was a really great show. And that will be his, like, entire...
Yeah, synopsis of the show. It was
That's
good.
His entire synopsis of the show. Yeah, I really liked it. That was a good show. And I, like, go on for 2 hours about every little detail about the show. But...
That's so funny. I feel like it's really nice... the jobs that we're in, because we both understand the other person's job. Like, we 100% get it, have studied it, but I could never be a technical director and he could never be a lighting designer. And so
I can't be a stage manager. I hate sitting in rehearsals.
Yeah.
Designer run is bad enough if I had to sit through every one of those.
But there's some shows I don't want to sit through, but...
Yeah. So it's nice to not only go see shows together and talk about it, but to see each other's work in that... I mean, I've dated people in the past who don't have any theater background, and they'll be like, oh, lots of blue. And you're like, great. Like, that's all you had to say about my 600 cues, you know? Whereas
but most of them are like, oh, it changed lights a couple times. You're like, no, it changed lights a lot of times.
Yeah.
You just didn't notice.
Like, I think in Fame, I might have seen a tear or two. Just like, like, wow, everything's coming together. or like, even there will be times where we're talking about it before the podcast where Kyle will come in and it's like, I need an extra electrician, or I only have an assistant for the first 3 days of tech, and I need someone there. And he'll just be like, okay, I'll come in, and I'll, like, he knows my paperwork by now and exactly how I like things filed and organized. And it's nice that we can kind of hop in and help each other, but it's not like, oh, I would have done it this way, because I wouldn't.
She's always surprised when I'm focusing a line. She's like, oh, you did a really good job.
Yeah.
Like, it's true. Thanks. I've done it before.
Yeah. I think he came in. I think he's only focused lights once at the Norris. And I told Danny, I was like, let's put him front of house. Like, let's just, like, we'll have Jessica on the board. Like, we'll have Robin to lift. Like, whatever.
Just general basic lighting.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, you're maybe the fastest one here. One of the fastest. Like, let's.
But Cindy and I do that back and forth all the time. I'll be like, hey, the stage manager doesn't have time to do, you know, some kind of paperwork. Send me yours, and I'll just copy, you know, what's your format? What's your plot like? And
I think she now has all of my templates for everything I've ever done, because...
But she'll send me something and be like, I can't open this AutoCAD file. I need dimensions off of it to see if it can fit in a van so we can transport it. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of busy for the next 20 minutes. Let me get back to the office and pull it up and do it and send it back over to her. But, I mean, I pulled Kai, and I try not to pull him in much, but... when we were doing Adam's Family, I was like, we need a monster under the bed, and I do not have time to make a monster. I'm still trying to make this set look like Adam's Family's house. And so Kai sat at home and built me a monster for 2 days and drove in. I was like, yay, a monster. We're going to dinner. Okay, bye.
I will also say that Kai has brought Sir Doggington in multiple times for my request, which I'm always very appreciative of.
Exactly.
There have been multiple times where I'm like, Stacey, it's... It's the last day of tech. It's going real bad. Like, I'm really stressed. Like,
I need a therapy dog.
Yeah.
And Doggington's like, woohoo, going to visit.
Stacey will come back with, like, Starbucks and Sir Doggington. I'm like, we're good. We're ready. Like, what was I ever stressed about? Yeah. Oh, we have a show to do?
Yeah, I got a dog. There's now dog hair all over the green room. Great.
Yeah. But yeah, it's I like that you guys send each other AutoCAD drawings, and I like that sense of teamwork. We, especially with a lot of the, like, dance shows and stuff that we've been doing at the Norris. I mean, I've done AutoCAD, and I'm pretty sure I still have it on my computer, maybe. But I definitely primarily draft in VectorWorks. And there are some things that just, like, drafting a light grid in VectorWorks, you can do it, and it'll look fine, but it'll take double the time, and it'll never look as good. And so sometimes Kyle will be, like, having a slow day at work, and I'll be like, hey, here's my sketch. Like, exactly, and here are the dimensions. Can you just draw it out for me?
And actually, after I had left from that first Grinchmas and got brought back, I was like the primary AutoCAD guy. Like, that's all they had me do it. Like, they had me do all the mazes. They had me do, like, all the random things that was going on. They're like, oh, you can actually lead a crew too. Like, okay, let's do that. Yes. But, like, it's one of those, they've given me, like, the fastest CAD computer setup that on property. I was like, okay, now I can, like, bust through all of these other draftings, and I'll do Sky's little light plot random rigging.
This will take me like 20 minutes.
Yeah, if you ever see anything that looks like extraordinarily impressive that's not just like my plot, you might want to look at the bottom, and it says like drawn by KMP instead of SAJ. It's like, I always give him credit, but...
Yeah, I think I gave you credit in the last program. I think we listed you as, like... Yeah.
It's nice to be in a program.
Yeah. Yeah, Kai's made it in a couple programs because I'm like, I needed him to go sew something or build something or come up with some... Go pick up something from a prop shop.
Yeah.
Because he likes to go to, like, Goodwills and wander around. I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
I need these items, so if you run across them, just buy them.
Yes. 100%. Yeah, it's interesting. We're this... I mean, the production call that we're actually going to go to right after we get off this interview is the first show that we've ever done together, really. And it's the first, like, freelance theatrical show that he's done a couple of years. And so it's really interesting, that sense of teamwork when we're actually, I mean, it's interesting too, the difference between like a Universal and a theater setting and hopping back into that. Yeah. And then being like, oh, you have weekly production meetings? And oh, this is still a thing? Even like, yeah, it's lots of work. Like,
not everybody just works together all the time. It's only for 3 weeks,
yeah.
Exactly.
But
okay, well, we should probably wrap this up because you guys, like you said, got into your other production meeting.
The time flew.
Back.
Exactly. Like I was saying, sometimes they're short and sometimes it's like you get people talking and then everyone's just super excited about talking.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, Twin, you want to ask the final question? You've disappeared off our screen, but...
I got tired, so I was propping my head up. Our final question is... Because this is Twins Talk Theater, do you have any twin stories or like a funny twin story or twins that you've worked with? Some people tell funny stories. Some people don't really have any stories. Some people like have gotten twins confused on shows before. So we just want to know a general twin story.
I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is that there are these two girls, Emily and Elena, and they're kind of like my little theater babies. They, my best friend just got married, and they were actually the flower girls in her wedding, even though they're both like 18 and like are technically adults. But they've done theater with us forever. And so I remember like they used to be in all of, like the camps that like my best friend would cancel, and we'd all like go and get frozen yogurt after. And I remember it took me a decent amount of time to like fully 100% of the time distinguish the two of them, even though like they're two completely different people and I have like amazing different relationships with the both of them. But I think that from learning how to distinguish the two of them, I've gotten better at distinguishing other twins. Like, I don't think that if we were in real life, I would actually get the two of you confused. Because
we've talked about, because if you meet us together, then it's different than meeting us apart. Because you already know me.
Yeah.
And you know so much about me because we work so many shows together that you already know some of my...
Your mannerisms.
Yeah,
and,
that she doesn't always have. But if you meet us together, a lot more people are confused about it.
Oh, 100%. Kyle, do you have any good twin stories?
The first thing that popped in my mind, we have twin directors at Universal that do our Grinchmas show. Their name is Frit and Frat, actual names.
Whoa, those are the best names.
And
their parents hated them.
I'm sure. Yeah. And they're great. They're our choreographers, and then they also like, they direct most of the shows that we have for the holiday time. The only best part about them is that they're huggers completely. Like they'll run up to the office and they will like go down the cubicle aisle and just every single person's like, come on, you got to hug both of them. that's the other thing. The other thing I was thinking about, have you guys seen like the iPhone X people stumping it with the twin faces?
No.
Like, okay, so there's like a video about a bunch of twins that are that have the new iPhone X that has the face recognition.
Oh,
and then they try to unlock each other's iPhone.
That would be interesting.
It's actually really interesting, depending on like how like closely matched that they are.
Yeah, because we're identical, but they get closer where you can be mirror twins or something, depending on at what point the egg splits. But I mean, we're identical, but we're not mirror. And it depends, you know, sometimes her hair's lighter or she has glasses or our weight goes back and forth on who's more or less. Yeah. Or we try to have a conservation of everything. So, like, you know, she started biting her nails. She stopped. I started. She loses weight. I gain weight. It balances.
Yeah. It's all a balance. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I wonder if I can unlock your phone. Probably not. You don't even have an iPhone.
Correct. No iPhone for me. These two twins, do they do the shows together or is it like one's a director and one's a choreographer?
No, they both do the shows together. And so it they'll usually like take half the actors and do their own thing, but they're always dressed the same. Like if they I'm not sure if they live together or not, but I definitely know they like match their outfits. They match like every detail of it. Like they'll be like, "Oh, we're wearing fedoras today. Oh, we're doing vests today." Yeah, they're great.
That's exciting. I want to meet them now.
Yeah.
We need to interview these people because that sounds so cool.
Okay, you guys got another production meeting to go to, so thank you so much for being part of this, and I'm sure you'll listen to it about 5 minutes after it comes out, and I'll get a phone call or a text message being like, oh my god!
I'll be like, my voice sounds so weird!
Seriously.
I never listen to our podcast because I think we sound funny, but Cindy listens to them, so...
Well, no, I've listened to 3 of them. I have not listened to all 7 of them.
Okay, Kyle listens to them over and over and over again while he edits and puts them together and figures that out.
Yeah.
Good job.
Go Kai.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, too. I still have my next show I need to work on, so.
It's 9:30 her time. She's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not that bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Twins Talk Theater. If you would like more, please visit our website at twinstalktheater.podbean.com or on Facebook at Twins Talk Theater. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music. Also, give us a review on iTunes and tell us what you liked about the show.